It's the My Michelle Live Podcast.
My Michelle Live. Health Watch. She's writing a prescription for hope. Here's Michelle.
Thanks for hanging out with us on what we call Health Watch Wednesday. It's May, and it is Mental Health Awareness Month. It's time for us to center in on the anxiety, depression, other mental health disorders that plague us in America. Issues, whether it's autism or schizophrenia, some of the effects of drugs that have overtaken our society. That is part of the education, understanding. You know, there's still a big segment of America that doesn't even believe that in mental health issues. There is such a thing as clinical depression. But, you know, we're made up of chemicals. Things go wonky in our body and sometimes in our brain. Just because someone looks normal doesn't mean what's going on in their head is. So today on Health Watch Wednesday, we're going to be talking about something deeper that transcends all of the issues that we deal with, a deeper story. And what do we do when some of our biggest struggles start with the heart? Today, we're going to be talking about going a little bit deeper and finding fulfillment in life that helps us to live large. So I've been flying and traveling quite a bit. You can see when you travel from city to city, some of the angst, the anxiety that people are experiencing. And now the FAA is saying, yeah, it's so bad, we're putting our foot down.
The Federal Aviation Administration is tightening up how it deals with unruly passengers, announcing in an order that warnings would no longer be issued to passengers who commit unruly acts, reports The Hill. The news comes as the FAA says it's seen a disturbing increase in incidents where airline passengers have disrupted flights with threatening or violent behavior, according to the Associated Press.
And this is what's happening with mental health. It is pervasive. All of us, to a degree or another, have dealt with the effects of lockdown, masks, mask wearing, control, some of the shutdowns and businesses going under, worrying about getting sick or tired of people pushing their fears or their concerns, as however you look at them, on you. All of those things have affected all of us. Here's a little bit of a montage from Eyewitness News, from NBC News, just to give you a little insight as we look at mental health awareness in May.
Well, a lot of us are still dealing with the trauma that we've experienced over the course of the last year. So a return to normal isn't exactly the same normal that it used to be. And that gives people a lot of stress and, frankly, gives people a lot of distress as well.
There's a kind of hesitancy as well by many about things like not wearing your mask in public, kind of like a blanket to a child. It's hard for some to let go. As part of Mental Health Awareness Month.
After 15 months of playing it super safe, society now taking some big steps toward a return to normal, like exercising outdoors without a mask.
I think working out with a mask is the most challenging thing. I'm really happy to not have to wear the mask while working out.
30-year-old Elizabeth Bernard is vaccinated, but still keeping her distance. There's still a lot of anxiety out there.
The important thing to keep in mind is that anxiety soars with uncertainty. We need to be able to function. Are we able to go back to our jobs like we used to? Are we able to connect with others like we used to?
I feel comfortable wearing a mask. Maybe other variants.
Even though I'm vaccinated, I still don't indoor dine. I'll only outdoor dine. I'm not ready for that yet.
I wanted to take on something deeper than just the usual of health and wellness. I wanted to take on health and wellness of our hearts and our spirits. We have most definitely fallen into a trap of angst, anger, anxiety, depression, and it is a cycle. I wanted to introduce you to someone who I've known for many, many, many years. He was actually part of why I'm doing this today. He was part of a conglomerate that had a radio station. And in that radio station, I happened to get hired. He was always inspirational to me, words of encouragement when I saw him from time to time. And a part of why I'm doing what I'm doing today is because of real, genuine people like Bob Lanach. Now, Bob has written a new book I want to show you. It's called, don't you love that background? Because then it just kind of makes it look weird, but that's okay. Let's see. Yep, there you go. That's so crazy. Still getting used to technology, Bob. But Bob's written this book, Live Large, Seven Lasting Lessons for Navigating Life's Twists and Turns. And there you go. Thank you. I do like my brick wall. I like that. This book is really inspirational, taking you to a real deep level of living large. A lot of lessons that Bob has learned himself. And as I was talking to Bob just before we got on air, it's not one of those preachy books, you know, that tells you, well, I know it all. I've lived it all. It's really kind of saying, look, you're probably at a place where you have a lot of knowledge. You may even have a lot of life experiences. Now let's center in. Let me teach you share with you rather than teach you some of the lessons that I've learned and that I'm trying to learn now. I really appreciate that. And it's good to connect with you and see your happy face again, Bob.
Thank you. I love what you're doing, Michelle. You've always been an inspiration to me.
Well,
and a lot of fun.
Bless your heart. You know, this world, we're very, very divided, and we can spend a lot of time in anger, in division over issues that may be very important, but sometimes we miss the deeper story. We miss that there's a deeper hope. We miss that there's an issue that is more important than all of the COVID and the masks and the immigration and the who's in the White House. There's an issue that's more pressing, and it infiltrates into all parts of our lives. And that's understanding and connecting personally with the God story. And you talk about that really in the book.
Yeah. You know, it's been an amazing journey in my life. I did not grow up in a home that would be close to called Christian or religious or anything. My dad was blue collar, hard drinking, hard working guy, taught me to work hard. I became a Christian, a follower of Christ with Young Life way back. And ever since then, I've been pinching myself. I don't know why me. But yeah. I got sort of steered. I often say I got a good deal because I wasn't able to handle anything but that. I used to get hit upside the head with a 2x4 to go change jobs or something, and go there and go there, and it led me all around the world. And I had, you know, 4 kids, 9 grandchildren, and every time I'd go on a trip somewhere, I'd come back with a story. And the story I'd tell to them, because we have a close family. I didn't grow up in a close family. That was sort of my goal, is like, hey, I want to talk to my kids. I actually want to talk about life rather than just baseball or something, which I love.
Yeah. Can I just intervene there? My dad always said that football was life and Jesus was life, not necessarily in that order. So, you know, there's a place for that.
Well, yeah, exactly. Anyway, they'd always say, you know, Dad, you got to write those stories down. And so I thought, I don't like to write and I'm busy. But then at the end of my life, after 3 different careers and a lot of other stuff, going into amazing places, experiencing things I wish I didn't have to experience, that oftentimes would hit me upside the head. The one thing I had in common, probably because I wasn't raised in a religious home, was I wanted the real deal. I didn't want to say the words without having the experience. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that makes sense to you, but like to know God. And, you know, early on in my Christian faith, I thought somebody would tell, oh, you have to speak in tongues. That'll really get it for you. And I go, well, okay, yeah. I'll try that. And it didn't work for me. And so then I tried other stuff. You know, I tried silent retreats. I tried, and my life's been trying, you know. But it's the secret thing that maybe overlaps part of this book, Living Large, is you got to quit trying.
It's the simple things. It's the simple things.
Simple.
Genuine.
Yeah, simple.
Can I tell those who are listening something? That's actually pretty indicative. If you pick up the book, you'll see it fairly quickly. But that's kind of indicative of Bob. And maybe I've not actually told you this before, but as a young broadcaster, your genuine, real way of living out the God story was an inspiration, because I don't want to be religious. You have a background in, you know, that the kind of fundamental religious aspect that can be judgmental, and this is the way things are, and we see it on the left side of the aisle, we see it on the right hand side of the aisle, unable to build a bridge, unable to communicate, unable to talk about controversial subject matter because we're so steeped and we're so right. And we get angry at another side who does the very same thing, but all it is lopping back and forth, and we're missing the deeper story. Your way of living out just real genuine faith, without that kind of judgment and loving people, was an inspiration. That's why I do the show that I do. You know, God, I guess you could say God used you to inspire that is real, that's how real people can live it out. That's how you can reach to people who otherwise, as a fundamentalist, you know, I don't talk to people like that, or as a left-wing activist, I wouldn't talk to people like that. But that's not what real love or real faith is about.
No, absolutely. You know, when I was back in Washington, D.C., doing a lot of work of justice advocacy around the world, which was eye-opening and crazy. I thought I'd be the rest of my life there. And I got a call from Krista asking me if I would consider being the president. And I said, no. And then I did a bunch of research because the guy kept bugging me. It was a recruiter. And I said, no. But my wife said, yes, because we had kids out there. And so I said, dear, I know how to not get this job. I'm going to tell them the truth about me. And I'm thinking, you know, it's a pretty conservative place, and it's a pretty religious way kind of thing. And I said, that and me. So I wrote a letter, a 2-page letter. They wanted me a letter, and they wanted it overnight. So I typed out a letter on my computer, and I said, hey, you know, I really love Christ. I'm striving to personal relationship with him. I've had the great thing. There's a little bit of it, but you probably don't want me. I've been through a divorce. I drink wine and I smoke cigars. And I thought that'll for sure not get it.
Because that old Christian adage, I don't drink, smoke, or chew, and I don't associate with those who do.
Exactly. So, you know, I get a call and they invite me out to interview, and I'm going through the interview, and the board of directors, very, very impressive bunch of people. Halfway through the interview, I think it's going good. There's 5 other candidates. I'd pick any of the other 5. And I say, did you get that letter? And they held up the letter and said, yeah, I've underlined it, blah, blah. So we stopped lunch, went in the bathroom. 3 of these guys followed me in the bathroom. This is where the real work gets done for men, right? And I'm in the bathroom, and one guy says, you know, Bob, and this guy is the CEO of a big organization, generous, kind, wonderful guy. He says, you know, Bob, I've never told anybody this, but I actually own a winery. And the second guy, you know his name because he owns businesses. All he says, "Hey Bob, I can't believe I'm telling this. I've never told anybody this. This is actually my third marriage. And the third guy goes, what kind of cigars do you like? So I go, maybe I do have a chance for the job. But my point is, this is what the book is focused on. Words are easy. The Bible's really clear and simple. It's not religious. Jesus had a problem with religious people all the time. I run into people all the time. I'm part of a church. I have a little small group. And during the COVID, for instance, people have said, boy, I'm scared to death. These are followers of Jesus. And they do follow Jesus. Or, boy, I have a lot of anxiety. Or I have this or I have that. And I'm going like, gosh, you know, I don't. And I never want to put my, like, say, oh, gosh, I know how to do it. But that doesn't sound like the essence of God saying he'll hide us under his wings. He'll protect us. He'll nurture us. All these things that are words that people are not saying, oh, I know it's dangerous. I know there's problems. I know there's difficulties. But I'm okay in my heart. I'm okay in my heart.
That is a reality. It's something that can happen. And I've joked about it, saying that when you press in like that and you feel that overwhelming peace, you realize that either God is real or I've lost my mind. But either way, I'm at peace. So it's a good thing, right? I wanted to tell our audience that, as Bob was talking about Krista, that was the overarching business, that the radio station that I would say I got my biggest start at was under, and that's where we connected, and that kind of leadership really was apparent. The getting real, the honesty, this is who I am without pretense. It's a time in history, especially now, where that religious pretense is garbage. I'm sorry if you're listening and that's, you know, that's kind of been your MO, but that kind of religious pretense and putting on a fake smile on a Sunday morning to let everyone know that everything's just fine. God bless you. Hallelujah. Because in reality, God doesn't need you to be his PR campaign. God's word and who he is kind of stands on its own. And your book starts out with chapter one, be still and know that I'm God. I think that I'm God.
Yeah, that's it. You got it. I'm glad you read it again. Way to go.
The important thing of that, in a very difficult time in my life, going through profound things, profound loneliness, profound trials, and trying to figure it out, having profound anxiety, whatever it may be, there was nothing I could do but just sit in the bathtub. And I didn't know what to pray and I didn't know what to think, but all I could do was just go, God is real. I know he's real. And that was it. That was a start. And that's where you say it's not rocket science. It's simple. It's simple. And from that place grew my faith. From that place grew just a trust, a peace, as God started putting the pieces of my life back together.
Well, that be still thing, the first chapter, you know, you know, I learned that from walking my granddaughter, my ninth granddaughter. And I'm not a be still guy.
Right? Oh, I'm high, like, five, my friend. High five. Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying.
Somebody once told me, I had a good friend, said, Bob, you've got something to do next on your mind, even if you don't have anything to do. And I'm like, yeah, you got me. So I've learned to be quiet. And God speaks to me. You know, I used to hate it when people said that, because I didn't hear a lot of stuff sometimes from God, but he speaks to me now. And here's one of the things, this is the kind of way he talks to me. It was a prayer. It was sort of like he told me what to say back to him, which is kind of weird, but it was this.
Oh, come on. Your wife does that sometimes, right?
Oh, well, that's for sure. It was, God said to me, Bob, I love you. and my love has no requirements. It does not require anything of you. And I thought, well, that sounds like unconditional love, but that require word. I thought, well, aren't you supposed to be good? And he said, no, there's nothing. It kept coming to me. There's nothing required. I love you. And then it dawned on me that when you really grasp that in your heart, when you understand, you know, the chapter, second chapter's on the voices you hear, when you hear God, when you know God never condemns you, never shames you, when you drink that into your heart, you experience what the Bible calls joy. And that joy, you require of yourself to give everything back to God.
Huh. See, God
doesn't, God doesn't need you to love him back. But when you understand what that unconditional love actually does for you on a deep level, you're good. And you can say to God, okay, what do you want me to do? Where do you want me to go? How can I find? And, you know, I do all kinds of different kind of stuff on the air, Facebook and stuff. Thank God for my son, who's a whiz at all this, because all I do is talk and he makes it happen. But it's about learning the deeper spiritual principles. And like I say, they're not like deep, hard to find out. Like, just be still. God will talk to you. Listen. Figure out what voice is his and what voice isn't his. When something comes your way, welcome it, even though it's miserable. Because God loves you and he's working on you. He's honing you down and building you up. So
that's a unique principle. And part of living large is that understanding that we have just as we have a backwards way of looking at religion. And as you said, Jesus himself wasn't a big fan of religion and the religious, but more of a relationship. I think we have a backwards way of looking at blessing. We think blessing is anything that pads my bank account, makes me feel good, anything that like a little present that I get that I really like. And if we don't get what we like, we're like the kid who opens a present and just get socks from grandma and cries, right? But in reality, we're going to need those socks. And in reality, anything, in my opinion, that comes from the hand of God in my life is a blessing. The Bible actually says that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. So those heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, I don't know why, God, I don't even like you right now moments are still God's unconditional love working something glorious in us, through us, and around us that we just can't see.
Yeah, the only problem with that is you hate it when somebody tells you that when you're in the middle of it. Right? But
yeah, you got me there.
But it's true, see? And that's why, that's another thing, you know, we're so immediate. It's one of the things I think about walking with God, it's about a lifetime experience. You just got to commit to walk with a lifetime, and you got to commit to do it with other people and be honest, which is one of my early great blessings, because you have to. It's not an overnight thing. Deepening relationships is like with a friend, right? You got to spend time and you got to learn and you got to grow, because God's ways, I mean, the essence of the book again is God's ways are not our ways. Blessings are, sometimes blessings come with finances and other stuff, but there are deeper blessings. There are the stuff, another one of the little deals is like prayer. Okay. We think prayer is either talking to God or listening to God. But there's a third prayer, staying in his presence, sitting at his feet, drinking in his majesty, knowing his names. It's not, nevertheless, Lord, not my will be done, but yours. He's got something way better than finding a parking place for me.
I don't know. My mom always believed in parking angels. I will tell you that right now.
Yeah, a lot of people do. And
knowing that he's God, that's part of it. I guess you can liken it to, and I've recently referenced the book Song of Solomon, which is a story of Eros, you know, the love of a man and a woman. And it's so important that there's an entire book in the Bible about it. But it's also a likeness of our relationship with the Lord. And if you know falling in love and you think about that person and you think about the good things about that person and your heart is filled with thoughts, it's hard to sometimes to concentrate on the work at hand because boom, there they filled your mind again and you just can't wait to see them. That's a bit of what I hear from you when you're saying that third kind of prayer. It's not just blabbing to God and giving him my shopping list. It's not just it's not just all of the other things that we consider prayer, the intercession and all. Sometimes it's just being still and just knowing that he's God.
Yeah, that's why I picked these chapters again, some of them. Like one of the chapters is pray without ceasing. Now that's in the Bible.
Yeah.
Pray without ceasing. And when I started thinking about that, I thought, are you kidding me? How the heck does that work? Pray without ceasing would mean like I don't have to, how can I talk to somebody else? But I've actually discovered, you know, that I can have a hotline to God while I'm talking to you. And even when I submit more to him, it's like, tell me what to say. And sometimes I found stuff coming out of my mouth and I go like, who said that? That was pretty good.
Can I give you a little, this is something I learned early on when I was still working at Krista. And it helped me through my radio career. Sometimes this is really cool. Not just God, you know, prompting you. It's like you get this prompt with scripture, you know, hide the word in your heart and boom, it comes out. And I noticed really early on, and here's a little secret. I'm almost embarrassed. I'm giving away my radio secrets, Bob, but I would just speak out scripture in everyday language, and people would say, "My Michelle, you are so profound." I'm thinking,
"Yeah, yeah, exactly."
Thank you.
Thank you very much. No plagiary. You can quote the Bible because it doesn't have a copyright.
Thank you. I'm glad God doesn't have a copyright. I wanted to hear, and this is where you excel. You are a storyteller, and I thought perhaps you could tell a story about your travels, the things that you've seen in hearing God's voice, in being still, even in the midst of crazy circumstances. What story comes to mind?
Well, I'm debating on whether to tell you one in the book or the one that's not in the book.
Ooh.
That I couldn't share on the book because I couldn't disguise it. But let's see. How about this one? This is in the book because it is, I think it's also a very important concept. See, God just told me, don't tell another story. There's people actually listening to this. and it would put people in danger.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
So I'm at Malibu where I had a religious experience with Christ and I met the Lord. I was in Young Life. And I came back, I was on the Young Life staff 10 years later. I'm still a rookie, you know, but I'm the speaker. And I decide to stand out on a place and keep all the kids entertained so that they wouldn't go out somewhere and jump in the ocean. And late at night, everybody's supposed to be in their bed. This kid comes walking down who's a counselor, but he's young because I'm, course 29 and he was 17. So this guy says, hey, I said, what are you doing, Jimmy? I still remember his name. What are you doing? He said, I'm meeting this other girl counselor and this teenager because we got to cast out a demon. And I'm like, Jimmy, we don't do that here. I've never had an experience with that. What is that? What are you doing? What are you thinking? Oh, I have. I've had experience. This woman, this lady, this young high school kid was in a kind of witch group, whatever they call them. I forget.
Coven,
yeah. And, you know, she can bend spoons with her mind and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me? You better just go back to your cabin. You're not supposed to be out with the girls at night, Jimmy. And, you know, so, but then his counselor comes down with a lady. And for some reason, after he tries to talk to me some more, he said, I've had experience like this. Go, you know, okay, go down a big squawka, be in there, and I'll give you a half hour to cast out the demon. So I put a time limit on it. You know, that's like my expertise, right? Here's again, another principle in the book, like when you find people that know more than you do, go with them. So Jimmy's down there and I, you know, I'm watching my time. And by this time it's, you know, midnight or something later. And I go down there about 45 minutes and they're praying over this girl. And the woman counselor, the guy counselor and the girls laid out playing. And she just kind of there. And I said, how's it going, Jimmy? How you doing on casting out that demon? And he goes, and literally that's probably how I said it. And he goes, well, you know, it's hard. Jesus said, sometimes it's hard to pass out a demon. And of course I've never cast out a demon before. I don't even like going to like the exorcism movie or something, you know? And, so we pray a little more. And then Jimmy says, hey, I want you to, get the guy with the big nose. And this guy was a friend of mine who was the head counselor. And I said, you mean Roger, the guy with the big nose? Yeah, go get him. And of course I go, oh gosh, you know, he's sleeping. He's a head counselor. He needs sleep. Jimmy says, we really need the guy with the big nose. I got this vision. So I go, this is ridiculous, right? When you're hearing this story, you're going, are you kidding me? I go to get Roger. Roger says, wakes up sleepy. Hey, Raj, he's a good buddy. You know, hey, Raj, I'm trying to cast out a demon. We got to go down to, you know, Big Squawka. And he's like, what? And his wife's in the background. She goes, can I come? So I said, okay. This literal truth. I go down there with Roger and Sally and these other two people, and we're praying. And this is probably for 2 hours. And Jimmy's just going, we got to keep praying. Some demons only come out with prayer and fasting. And you could tell there was something wrong with the girl. She was starting to sweat. She had, well, then he said, you have to know the demon's name. And so pray that God will reveal the demon's name. Now, this is getting worse to me. This is getting cornier. Like, are you kidding? And he says, the demon's name is Pirate. So I go, oh, okay. So we start trying to cast out Pirate. And I'm not kidding you. The lady, this young gal, 17, she began to violently shake. She began to foam at the mouth. And the demon started talking. And I'm telling you, throw a wet blanket on the party, man. That just freaked me out, you know. But at the same time, I felt the presence of God. And I started praying. And that demon started arguing with me for a little bit, but I had an overwhelming confidence in the power of God and in what I was doing all of a sudden, which was completely opposite of, you know, what I was actually feeling in myself. And every person looked up and we saw and felt the demon leave. And we threw him in the inlet because he said we have to throw him in there somewhere. So it was one of probably three different occasions I've had in my life when I knew the presence of evil. And I knew there is a real spiritual battle. And you know, the next day that little girl was completely transformed. She invited Christ to come into her life and I stayed in touch with her. But my point is, some of the stuff we see today, this is why I wrote the book again. Some of the stuff we see today, I don't know if you ever look into the eyes of people that commit multiple murders or this or that. I don't know whether they're just mentally ill or whether they're evil, but it's one or the other. And there's a real battle for good and evil. And if you don't know how to arm yourself against evil, you're missing out. You're going to be vulnerable. If you do understand it and grow in that, swatting away demons is actually not that big a deal. But you gotta learn to do it. And, that's part of what life's all about. You know, St. Francis of Assisi, Thomas Kempis said, life is war. Tim Keller wrote another book that said, life is war. Because we struggle in our flesh. We struggle against principalities and power. And at the same time, we have the overwhelming joy and power of knowing what it's like to walk with God. And isn't that interesting, the Bible? I'll just shut up after this. I went through the Bible figuring out how many times it said, and God said to Abraham, take your family and go to Ur. Like, what? Pack up and go? Or, you know, take your son and Isaac, take your son and go up and sacrifice him. Or Moses, go in there to Pharaoh. And, you know, just tell him you're going to swat him down with these plagues. I'm like, what? You must have really heard God. I just wouldn't do that on a whim. Are you kidding? How do you really hear the voice of God? And that's chapter 2. You know, how do you distinguish? Because I'll tell you, when you hear the voice of God, it's not an audible voice for me. I don't think it's like, you know, God actually talks out loud. I think you just know, because you know who he is and you know he would say that.
That's well put.
And then you start learning that when he says it, do it, because you will be the beneficiary.
And here's a part of the secret that you reveal as well is you know him. You said you know because you know him, and you know him because the things that he says in the Word, the Bible has a consistency. It doesn't contradict itself. And anyone who says that it does, if you're listening, send those things that you think are contradictions my way, and we'll talk about it. Because in delving in deep, I've yet to see a true contradiction in God's Word. There's just cover to cover. And so you see that, you know it, and you know kind of compare and say, no, that's God. That's God right there. If there's any doubt in your mind, that's a lot of what we need for the peace to be able to endure in the times that we're in. And the times that we're in, I'm not going to lie, they're scary. They're overwhelming. And you tackle that a bit in the book, in that bad things really do happen. But you also, I think that is like chapter 5, and then chapter 6 is, I believe in miracles. I would thought maybe in our final few minutes together, you could share a story about miracles. That's something that in our God, science is God era, we forget that miracles can happen. And if you listen on Tuesdays, my friend, you can hear why miracles aren't just this, I mean, they are, but, you know, there's science there too, to God being outside of our dimension, and why science proves that God is would have to be outside of our dimension, the evidence that's there that gives insight into this glorious God. So whilst we adhere, Bob, to science, that's the ultimate authority, we're seeing more and more that in science, there is overwhelming evidence for a creator, overwhelming evidence for intelligent design, and a lot of evidence that is astounding of the fingerprints of who that designer is. And the way that it fits in with the God of the Bible is becoming more and more evident. And that's all great. But when I'm going through crazy times, I'm not thinking about science at that point. People aren't praying to the God of science. They're in the foxhole. Everyone's like, okay, okay, God, where are you? And that's where you can really see that miracles do happen. I thought perhaps you could share one of the miraculous stories that you've been privy to.
Well, let me just say that I think the reason that we have a problem believing in miracles is that we think we know what we know through what we see and feel. And I think there are other ways to know things. They're called faith, hope, and love. And that if there is a God, you know, you talked about contradictions. There's a lot of dynamic tensions in the scriptures that people try to understand. But when you really think about it, it won't work. So for God is, Jesus is fully man, fully God. So explain that one. Or explain the Trinity. Three persons in one. You don't know. You can say what it's not, but what it is an incomprehensible God. We can't comprehend God. Sure way to find out a cult is to, they can explain everything about God. So the idea of knowing God intimately and through faith is, he says, we see through a glass darkly. We don't know it all. And he can invade. In fact, he probably is, you know, the fact that God is everywhere, he's all powerful, he's all present with everybody. Just try to put that in your pipe and smoke it. That just like is the weirdest thing you could imagine. But he does. He loves you. He is right there ready. The Spirit is ready to move in your heart if you want to, no matter what, who and where you are. So miracles happen all the time. Mostly they're unseen. For me, I had an operation. They said there was 1% chance. I talk about this in my book. There's 1% chance of something going wrong. And I'm very healthy. I'm older than I want to admit, but I'm still out fishing, walking, you know, running, doing stuff. And so I go, 1%, that ain't gonna touch me. Well, I pass out in a car with my wife. I go into a 7-Eleven, I go to the bathroom, I lock the gate, I lock the bathroom door, and I pass out. Somehow the bathroom door opens. I fall out into the 7-Eleven. I vomit blood. And next to me comes a lady and puts me in her arms and says, I've been sent because it was all right. You're all right. And there's enough blood to cover the 7-Eleven floor. I mean, it's everywhere. They've nicked my lower esophagus with the ablation thing they did. And I was just vomiting blood. And the aid car was by. My wife, luckily, was right there, called the aid car. The aid car was there in 30 seconds because they were driving by. Kathleen knew what would happen. She called the ER. There was a ER doctor that specialized in this. I was in there. I had lost 4 pints of blood. There's some technical word I forgot. When you lose more than you can and it threatens your life. Well, I had left more than, you know, that I could. And I went in the operating room to get the thing sewed up. And this is the only time, by the way, I've ever been in the hospital. My entire life. And of course I'm out like a light, and the doctors afterwards, I wake up and the doctor said, you know, this is kind of weird. We thought you needed at least 4 pints of blood, which is a lot. And when we measured your blood again, it's like, you didn't need any more blood. And people said you had thrown up all over that blood. What's the deal on that? I don't get that. Well, then they put me in the ICU. And I'd never been in ICU, right? So they hook you up and you can't get out of the bed. I want to go to the bathroom. I jump out of the bed. The alarms go off. Nurses are rushing in. I'm feeling fine. And they're like, no, you can't do that, blah, blah, blah. Doctors are coming in. Look at me. I'm like, hey, I'm good. By the end of the first day, they said, okay, I guess we can let you go to the bathroom. Second day, they said, we're going to keep you for 3 days. Start of the second day, I'm like, could I get up and walk around? So nurses would come in there. And by the way, my MO is not talking about Jesus to people, everybody and their mother, you know, but I was then. I was like, hey, do you know what it's known to like Jesus? Some of them are going, yeah, yeah. And others are going, what are you talking about? This, I'm a religious idiot. And then I'm walking around in the ICU the second day. And I look around, there's nobody else walking around. Everybody else is hooked up, you know? And I'm going, what's everybody looking at me for? Well, you know, we've never really had an ICU guy that was supposed to die. And you're like, fine. And then I went down to the third floor. They put me down to a regular room the third day, and a nurse came in. And of course I gave her the, hey, you don't happen to know Jesus, do you? And she's like, yeah, I was a missionary with the Navigators and I was this and that. So I've actually become friends with this person on Facebook. And she says, and she read my book and she said, you know, I didn't hear the whole story, but I'll tell you, the one thing she said to me right there is, Bob, I've read your chart. Somebody's really was looking after you. That's one of my best miracle stories.
I love it. And there it is. You know, miracles really do happen. Good things happen, but also things that are difficult. I mean, that was difficult. That was difficult. I can't even imagine what your wife was going through. Those difficulties, God can do good things. Now, even let's just say that something horrible happened and you didn't pull through, that doesn't change two things: that God is good, and that thing that you started our interview with, his unconditional love. Why?
Well, I think again it's your view of all of life with what's penetrated you over time. Is that in that regard, death has no sting. I had a funeral of one of my very best friends, and he was dying. I was on a deathbed with him. He's a follower of Jesus. He could hardly talk. His lungs were surrounded. This was 3 weeks ago. And I said, called him by name and said, do you want to tell me anything? Now, this is a guy who can hardly talk. He's got children. He's my age exactly. And he says, Bob, I'm the most grateful man in the world. And I go, why? He said, well, I know where I'm going. I'm not afraid. And then he says to me, Bob, I got a message from God for you. Now, the message is unimportant. He told me something, but I'm going like, can you imagine this guy? See, the scripture says out of the fullness of a man's heart, he speaketh. So put things in your heart that are good and you will speak. This guy's on his deathbed and he's telling me he's grateful. And then he's wanting to encourage me.
Now that's living large even until the end. That is living large right there. And you're right. This is kind of a message for all of us right now in the times that we're in, Bob, that what am I filling my heart with? If I'm filling my heart with fear, if I'm filling my heart with politics, if I'm filling my heart with issues, and all of those things are important. Don't get me wrong. You know, I applaud you if you're involved in activism, trying to change things.
Yes,
and that's your
absolutely.
Passion. Those are great things, but those aren't the deeper things that we were talking about today, and that's the God story. If your heart is filled with that kind of love, that overwhelming love, I want to go back as we end to what you said that is fundamentally life-changing. God just saying, I love you. No strings attached. That's it. There's no requirements, you said. No requirements. That kind of love that fills your heart, it empowers you in your activism. It empowers you to have a better view. It empowers you to look beyond hate and division and judgment, religion, whatever it may be that holds us up. And that comes from understanding, to me, the fundamental things that are not negotiable in my life are twofold: the person and the work of Christ. Every political issue, every other topic, hey, I'll talk to you about, but there are two things settled in my life: the person and the work of Jesus Christ. And from that's where I find that unconditional no requirements, kind of love. Whoever you are, whatever your lifestyle, whatever your choices, it all starts there. I'll give you the final word, my friend.
Hey, Michelle, I want to tell you something. Keep being you. God created you, and he didn't create you to be somebody else. He created you to be you. And a walk with Jesus has to do with embracing everything that God gave us as a gift and being the real us. And when people like share testimonies, they got to be real. And when they're real, because they come out of who we are, God gets the glory. Thanks for everything you're doing. The fantastic job. I love what you do. I love the way your site looks. I love the love. You know, it's so important in today's world when people are heading in directions that won't be fulfilling for them. So God bless you. Thank you for being here. You're going to tell people to buy my book again?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I do. That's what I do. In fact, you can go to mymichellelive.com. When you go there, we'll probably even have a picture of the book by the time you see this. And you can just click on and get the book. And while you're there, like us, share us. If the God story is important to you, this is one way we're getting it out. This is one way that we're reaching the world with a little bit of hope and a little bit of fun as well. So please, like us, share us, comment wherever you're hearing us, send me an email if you have questions. I'm here for you. And let's just keep sharing the God story. The book is Live Large, Seven Lasting Lessons for Navigating Life's Twist and Turns. I love Living Large, the book, and I love Living Large myself. So Bob Lanach has been our guest, and what a delight it's been. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Hey, friends, I wanted to tell you I'm doing pretty good on trying to get rid of that COVID-15, and I've been doing it with good nutrition, getting out there and exercising, and Calitrin, which is a collagen supplement that reminds my body that, you know what, remember how you used to be able to eat a lot and not worry about weight? Yeah, you don't do that so much when you're older. Now, with good nutrition especially, that Calitrin stuff, fountain of youth in a bottle. So go to mymichellelive.com, click on Calitrin, find out how it can help you look better, feel better, and lose weight.
From Wild Scrubbrush
to Gentlemen Refined Stash Wax, from Real Bearded Men at mymichellelive.com.
More than just talk, we want to change lives, and maybe change lives one child at a time. So get ready. We're going to partner with Child Care Worldwide. Listen to those precious voices. Those are kids like we're going to introduce you to every week. Just a short segment with myself and my old friend. Not that he's old, but we've done this thing a couple times before in other venues. Bill Nienhaus from Child Care Worldwide. Hey, Bill.
Hey, it's great to see you today and hear from you and to be a part of your program. Thank you.
Thanks. I am excited to learn a little more about some of the kids that we lives we can touch. It's a crazy time in the world. A lot of us have been holed up. A lot of us have been living in fear of sickness, of loss of jobs, and so many other things. But you think of what that would be like for children around the world whose lives are already difficult, and then you throw a pandemic and people holding on to their purse strings a little bit tighter and forgetting that we're here for a reason, and that's to make a difference, Bill.
That's so true. And you know, everybody is in a different state of mind when it comes to this pandemic. For some, it's just an annoyance, right? I can't go out, do the things I want. I might not be able to go to church like I want. For other people, it's life and death. And I live in a scenario with my ministry partners where we have a lot of variety. And I just got off a call not too long ago with our directors who were talking about, again, the struggle with the COVID issue in their countries and how it's affecting the kids, not just how it's affecting their families and them physically, but it's how it's affecting them mentally, that their anxiety levels are off the chart.
And because the adults are the adults are, and even more so because children need that sense of security in sometimes areas and countries where security is few and far between, those feelings.
That is so true. And I think that's the thing that is the long-term aspect of this. You know, if they do get COVID, if they hopefully, Lord willing, recover from that, that's a temporary situation. But this mental issue that's been going on with our kids is going to be something that lasts quite a while. And we are just asking God to intervene. We're asking the Lord to come in and touch the minds and the hearts of these kids so that they can not only get through the period they're in now, but get back into a normalcy that begins to reduce their anxieties and get them back to what it means to be a kid again and not have to worry about a lot of these things. So that's our prayer every day.
Absolutely. The thing that I would like to communicate to you today as you're watching or listening is twofold. One, during pandemics, disasters, natural disasters, wars, those things happen in the world where we're an imperfect fallen people. But it seems as though, Bill, during those times, great things can happen. The human spirit, it thrives, and God has our attention in ways that maybe he never did before. And you'll see people's hearts reviving. You'll see people's knees bending. You'll see lives changed in the midst of absolute pain and chaos. Now, that's part one. Part two is we can be part of that change instead of sitting back and being victimized by the pandemic and by the circumstance. We can be part of the solution. We can change the world. And today, and as we get together for these little interactions, we can change the world one child at a time. Tell us about a child that we can change the life of. Maybe someone out there listening today would consider semi-adopting in a way.
Yeah, that's right.
By sponsorship.
That's right. Yeah, I would love to do that. That's the core thing of what Child Care Worldwide does, is we sponsor children. And in that sponsorship relationship between the child and the sponsor, we ensure that they not only get certain benefits, they get to stay in school, they get some household things that they need, they get a Bible of their own, things like that. But ultimately, we're able to deliver the gospel of Jesus to them. And that's what we do every Saturday at our life centers.
That's
hope. It is hope. It's absolutely hope. So when a sponsor comes up and decides to choose and sponsor a child, they can ensure that through Child Care Worldwide, that kid will hear the gospel. That kid will be involved in Life Center every Saturday, and that a relationship will be developed between them and that child. They'll get to live the life of that child and hear all sorts of wonderful, inspirational things that come because of child sponsorship. So we have many kids that are needing child sponsorship. That happens all the time. We have hundreds of kids that are candidates. And I'm going to share my screen really quick so you can see one of these kids that we would like to talk about. Hopefully you can see that. This is Lucy. Can you see that, Michelle?
I'm going to make sure that we can.
Great, great. Want to make sure you can see Lucy here.
Poor Michelle. She's
okay.
Yeah, I'll get there.
It's fine.
Go ahead and talk about Lucy, great. And I'll get her set Lucy, up. There we go.
Yay. Lucy's from Kenya. We serve in Kenya and Uganda and other areas of the world, but in Kenya, this is where Lucy lives. She was born in 2006, so that makes her 14, something like that. Her mother and father are laborers. What that means is every day they go out and work for the money that they need to earn to put food on the table. So they don't necessarily have a permanent job. They are working for whatever the Lord will provide for them today. So as a laborer, that enters, you know, some unknowns about the future. Lucy probably doesn't know where mom and dad are going to get money next week or even the week after that. So there's issues there with constant steady income that's going to support that family. Lucy wants to be a doctor. Now, that's amazing, right? I mean, that's wonderful to see a kid want to aspire to that. So what Child Care Worldwide will do, if we can get Lucy sponsored, is to make sure that she has school fees that are paid so that she can stay in school and accumulate the knowledge she needs to ultimately begin to maybe be a doctor at some point. She loves to skip rope. That's one of the things that she mentions here is what she likes to do and fun. And then when she's around the house, she helps washing dishes and things like that. Her favorite meal is rice and vegetables, which is very common in this area of Kenya. But you can see her right there on screen. She is excited and wanting to meet a sponsor.
What so a beautiful child.
Yeah, we would love to match Lucy with someone in America who would love to take care of her, sponsor her, communicate with her, and help her achieve her goals. But most importantly, ensure that Lucy hears the gospel of Jesus every single Saturday.
That hope, it's hard for us sometimes to understand because it's so widely available here, truth, hope. But in extreme situations where you don't know where your next meal is going to come from necessarily, where education is difficult, that hope is amazing. That hope changes lives. And that's what we're looking to do, to be able to help Lucy today. So we're looking for someone who can give Lucy some love. And I'll tell you, when Bill says you communicate, you do. You can get letters and know where this child is. You can be part of a mentorship of a child in another country to kind of supplement. You're like an auntie or an uncle.
That's right.
That gets to be part of this child's life. So if you're in a place where you've been in social isolation and you're still not quite out of it, if you're in a place where you're feeling like, what is my purpose? When you pick up a purpose like this, you do change the world one child at a time. So how do you do this? You go to mymichellelive.com. On our front page, you'll see Childcare Worldwide, Sponsor a Child. Click on that link and you can make a difference today. Change the world with me. Let's stop arguing about masks. Let's stop worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow. Today, let's make a difference.
Amen.
Today. Thank you so much, Bill. And we'll check in with you next week. We'll introduce you every week to a new child with a new story that you can make a difference in one child at a time. Thanks so much, Bill.
Thanks, Michelle. God bless you.
My friends, there are some things that can help you if you're struggling mentally and emotionally during this time with the pandemic blues that we're all trying to come out of, the anxiety, fear, anger, whatever issues that are being bombarded at us by the media. It is all based on fear. Fear controls us. Fear causes us to watch more. Fear causes us to give more. Instead, why don't we just walk in love and find ways that we can love? And that's part of the God story. If you've liked what we've talked about today, please do like us, share us, comment on us, and spread the word. There is good news. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Michelle Mendoza.
More Health Watch at MyMichelleLive.com.